Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December the 29th, 2015. Pot Bank begs for access to nation's banking system. The booming marijuana industry went to a federal judge Monday seeking an answer to the problem that has vexed business owners trying to emerge from the black market. Now that pot is legal and taxed in some states, why can't they put the proceeds in a bank? A Colorado credit union designed to serve the pot industry, Fourth Corner Credit Union, was challenging a decision by the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City to keep the pot bank from accessing the nation's financial system. The Fed's rejection earlier this year means that the pot bank can't take deposits or issue credit, leaving many marijuana businesses operating on a cash-only basis. "What do you want us to do with the money?" cried an exasperated Mark Mason, lawyer for the credit union, which was chartered by Colorado last year, but has been unable to start taking customers. The credit union claims that although marijuana remains legal under federal law, the Federal Reserve, as a quasi-government institution, lacks the authority to keep marijuana banks out of the nation's financial system. Mason argued that a pot bank would serve the government's interest in keeping better tabs on the drug money. "They intend to take this money out of the shadows and off the street so that they can track it and trace it," Mason said. But the Federal Reserve insisted the bank is too risky. It's a risk the Federal Reserve has decided they don't want to take on," said Scott Barker, arguing for the Federal Reserve. U.S. District Judge R. Brooke Jackson repeatedly said he sympathizes with the struggling pot businesses. Jackson twice called existing federal guidelines on marijuana money a nothing burger, meaning that memos from the Treasury and Department of Justice don't solve the federal-state conflicts caused by legalizing pot. But he seemed hesitant to order the Federal Reserve to give a pot bank access to the banking system, as long as the bank is relying on memos from federal judges and not an act of Congress, to say pot shops should have a way to avoid dealing in cash. "We think there ought to be banking and regulation. I get that. I agree with that. But that's not the legal question here, is it?" Jackson said. The pot bank's lawyer argued that national marijuana legalization is inevitable, but Jackson retorted that the pot bank should take up its problem with Congress and not the courts. "If I were in the Congress, I'd vote for you, but I've got to do the job of a federal judge here," Jackson said. The judge repeatedly tried to encourage the sides to work something out themselves, perhaps by agreeing that Fourth Corner would serve only people who believe marijuana should be legal, not taking money from businesses that sell pot. Jackson pointed out that hundreds of banks already do take pot proceeds, even if they sometimes pretend they don't know what they're doing. For example, the state of Colorado uses Wells Fargo Bank, meaning that tax proceeds from the sale of marijuana goes into the nation's banking system already. "I think there's a certain unfairness to allowing these big banks, to serve this business and keep you out." Public saturation point. Heavy rains cause flooding and road closures. Decatur. Todd Garner expects to remain busy as large amounts of rain that continued to fall Monday across most of central Illinois was running out of places to go after hitting the ground. For many area residents, Garner said the problems might just be getting started, with over 6 inches of rain falling in some areas since Saturday morning. "We've probably got 50 or so phone calls in the last 2 days, and we'll probably get them all week," said Garner, vice president of Peerless Cleaners in Decatur. The company repairs water damage, mold, cleans carpets and air ducts, in addition to dry cleaning. "There's so much groundwater that we'll probably have sewer issues," Garner said. "People continue to wash their clothes, and of course they're taking showers, and there's nowhere for the water to go." Peerless crews have been working long days, Garner said. He thinks that will continue as long as the need is there. The seemingly endless rain that persisted over the holiday weekend poured almost all day again Monday, increasingly causing flooding and more than a little inconvenience. Trees were uprooted in some areas, and high winds led to power outages in spots. Ameren, Illinois activated its Emergency Operations Center to coordinate service restoration, logistical support, and communications. Ameren deployed nearly 500 resources to restore power as winds, flooding, and ice accumulation continued across the state. The largest concentration of outages was north of Decatur in the Peoria and Galesburg areas, according to Ameren. Street closures with water washing across roads has been one of the most widespread problems in and around Decatur. Macon County Engineer Bruce Bird said crews had used up its approximately 40 water-on-pavement signs to warn drivers of spots where water appeared most dangerous. Some of it was running back into catch basins, but Bird said not all lanes of roads were open in some areas. We're looking to identify where the trouble spots are, and we'll have to wait until it stops raining for it to go down, Bird said. A lot of spots are like that. Bird said drivers should be on the lookout for water on roadways, particularly at night when it's dark and harder to see what's ahead. Don't outdrive the vehicle's headlights, he said. The Decatur Police Department warned motorists to avoid underpasses, most of which are prone to flooding in heavy rains. If water is visible on the roadway, the police said not to try to drive through it, as it might be much deeper than it appears. Oakland Avenue from West Weaver Road to West Hickory Point Road was closed in Forsyth due to flooding. Travel was also discouraged in parts of Forsyth on Phillips Circle, East Barnett Avenue, Timber Lane, Surrey Lane, Woodland Drive, Weaver, Hickory Point, and Hundley Road, and some areas could be impassable, especially for smaller vehicles. Water on roadways with closures reported elsewhere, including in DeWitt, Douglas, Shelby, Christian, Effingham, Piatt, Coles, and Fayette counties. Officials in Douglas County were waiting for water to recede in some locations before being able to fully assess the situation, said Joe Victor, the county's Emergency Management Agency director. Victor said almost all the roads in Newman were underwater, with Illinois 130 and Villa Grove among the places with standing water and therefore closed. The Tuscola Fire Department had to rescue a man from his vehicle over the weekend as he drove too far into standing water. Victor said, water was standing on major highways with many rural roads down to one lane, Victor said. He said power outages were reported Monday morning in southern parts of the county near Arthur and Darkola. Elsewhere, the Harristown Fire Department was on the scene of downed wires on North Meridian Road about 2.5 hours about midday Monday. The roadway was blocked while Ameren crews repaired the break, but the fire department said heavy rains and winds of over 40 miles per hour hampered the repairs. Parts of Illinois 48 and other roads were reported flooded in Christian County. The possibility of levees breaking on waterways was a concern for officials in some areas. Fayette County Sheriff Chris Smith was watching levees south of Vandalia with a close eye using binoculars at times to get a better view. Smith said the possibility of U.S. 51 being flooded appeared likely with water either running over levees or having the levees break. He said the Illinois Department of Transportation was prepared to deal with that situation, but a long detour would exist if U.S. 51 were to be closed. It's a long ride out of the way, Smith said. The levees have broken before. At some point, it has to quit raining. Deputies would keep an eye on what the Kaskaskia River was doing overnight, Smith said. Stevens Creek in and around Decatur breached its banks, and people reported lakes in their backyards, downed trees, and flooded basements all over the area. The National Weather Service issued a flood warning for DeWitt County on Monday afternoon, as the county's Emergency Management Agency indicated a breach of a reservoir in Clinton appeared imminent due to the excessive heavy rain. The reservoir that was in question is on the northeast side of Clinton, north of North Street, as Illinois 54 leaves town. Based on past failures of the reservoir, the possibility of flooding was predicted on Illinois Highways 54 and 10 if another failure were to occur. The Weather Service expected flooding to linger for some time around the Clinton area. It was predicting an end to the rain across central Illinois by late Monday, with temperatures remaining above freezing into the nighttime hours. After a front passed, much colder weather is expected to be on the way, with highs closer to normal for this time of year, and only in the 20s with lows in the teens Thursday and Friday. The heavy rain didn't stop many shoppers from making their way to stores in the outlets at Tuscola Shopping Center over the busy post-Christmas weekend, General Manager Maury Mendenhall said. Parts of the center's parking lot were covered with water Sunday as Mendenhall checked to make sure all the drains were working properly. The water had gone down by Monday, he said. It didn't keep us from opening, Mendenhall said. The water has to have some place to go. Customers were still finding us a good shopping point off Interstate 57 as they were doing things like using gift cards on a busy shopping day. Some places were closed due to the weather conditions. Hiking and bike trails at Rock Springs Nature Center were closed due to flooding. The Mount Zion Police Department also issued a warning to stay off the biking walking trail between West Side Drive and East Florian Avenue, as the section of trail was completely submerged with a dangerous current. Sulphur Springs Road east of Traber Road near Mount Zion was also closed due to flooding. As the rain fell, a part of Decatur was dealing with a water main break that led to a boil order for water customers south of Decatur. The area included was from South Shore School on South Franklin Street Road to Highway 30 or Elwin Road and from US 51 to South Franklin Street Road. As residents began to clean up from the storms, Garner said homeowners should replace their sump pumps every few years. Those with carpet in basements that could get wet should call a professional, Garner said. Home shop vacs just don't have the power to get water out of the carpet and pad, he said. In a week or 2 weeks, they'll get a smell, Garner said. They'll grow mold on the back of the carpet padding. That water will work up through the drywall an inch an hour. Eventually, Garner said, it will seep into the trip and studs and even insulation. He said getting rid of that is a big and expensive undertaking. Huge storm spreads destruction and misery nationwide. Garland, Texas. Residents surveyed destruction from deadly tornadoes in North Texas as the same system brought winter woes to the Midwest on Monday, amplifying flooding that's blamed for more than a dozen deaths and prompting hundreds of flight cancellations. At least 11 people died and dozens were injured in the tornadoes that swept through the Dallas area on Saturday and caused substantial damage. That, plus flooding in Missouri and Illinois, were the latest in a succession of severe weather events across the country in the last week that led to dozens of deaths. The country's midsection was seeing a range of precipitation, including heavy snow, ice, and blustery winds in parts of several states, and heavy rain in already waterlogged parts of Missouri and Arkansas. The system caused more than 1,400 flights to be canceled, and nearly half of which were at Chicago's two main airports, and 2,600 to be delayed, according to flight tracking service FlightAware. A typical day sees about 150 cancellations and 4,000 delays. Authorities in Georgia said they recovered the body of a man whose car was swept away when floodwaters overtook it. They also recovered a second body, a death they said later Monday did not appear to be storm-related. In North Texas, local officials estimated as many as 1,450 homes were damaged or destroyed by at least 9 tornadoes. There is a huge impact on our community, and we're all suffering, Garland Police Lieutenant Pedro Barano said of the suburb about 20 miles northeast of Dallas, where 8 people died, 15 were injured, and about 600 structures, mostly single-family homes, were damaged. In nearby Rowlett, City Manager Brian Funderburk said Sunday that 23 people were injured, but no deaths and no reports of missing people. Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins said Sunday that as many as 600 homes were damaged in Rowlett. 3 people died in Collin County, about 45 miles northeast of Dallas, according to Sheriff's Deputy Chris Harvey, although the circumstances were not immediately clear. Texas Governor Greg Abbott made disaster declarations Sunday for Dallas, Collin, Rockwall, and Ellis counties and warned that the number of victims could rise. The American Red Cross was fanning out in the Dallas area to distribute supplies, including tarps, shovels, rakes, and trash bags. Chris and Sheila Carter were staying at a Red Cross shelter in Garland with their 22-year-old son. They live in an apartment complex there where they rode out the storm. Their ceiling caved in and they had some windows broken out with water leaking in after. It sounded like a train was on the roof for 5 or 6 minutes, Chris Carter said. Many roads across West Texas and the Panhandle were still closed with long delays expected. Interstate 40, the main east-west highway across the Panhandle, reopened Monday. Traffic had been in a standstill for hours in West Texas, where Interstate 10 splits into Interstate 20 before it began slowly moving Monday. Officials said traffic became snarled Sunday night and was backed up for about 13 miles. Vito Randazzo of California sat on I-10 for about 13 hours. Everybody's just sleeping in their cars, said Randazzo, who added that the roadway was snow-packed and icy. I can't believe the road was left in this condition. Around 9 a.m. Monday, he was able to see to drive across a median and get onto a service road. Oklahoma Governor Mary Phelan declared a state of emergency after blizzard conditions affected the western and central parts of the state, and up to a foot of snow fell in the southern and eastern sections. State emergency officials say that more than 50 people have been injured, and about 175,000 are without power. To the northeast, several inches of rain caused flooding in Illinois and Missouri, where Governor Jan Nixon also declared a state of emergency. Nixon says the state's death toll from days of pounding rainfall has risen to 10, and he expects that number to grow. State officials say there have been more than 200 closures statewide. Over the weekend, 6 people died when 2 separate vehicles drove into flooded roadways in south central Missouri, Pulaski County Sheriff Ronald Long said. 4 of them were international soldiers temporarily stationed at an Army base. Greene County authorities said 2 fatalities there were associated with the flooding. Residents in and around the small St. Louis area town of West Alton were evacuated as the Mississippi River nears a potential record crest. An unusual amount of late fall rain had the river already high before torrential downpours that began Saturday. Some parts of eastern Missouri have received 6 inches of rain or more over the past 3 days. Japan apologies sent for trade in sex slaves, Seoul, South Korea. An apology from Japan's prime minister and a pledge of more than $8 million sealed a breakthrough deal Monday in a decades-long impasse with South Korea over Korean women forced into Japanese military-run brothels during World War II. The accord, which aims to resolve the emotional core of South Korea's grievances with its former colonial overlord, could begin to reverse decades of animosity and mistrust between the two thriving democracies, trade partners and staunch U.S. allies. It represents a shift for Tokyo's conservative government and a new willingness to compromise by previously wary Seoul. A statement by both countries' foreign ministers said Prime Minister Shinzo Abe expressed anew his most sincere apologies and remorse to all the women who underwent immeasurable and painful experiences and suffered incurable physical and psychological wounds as comfort women, the euphemistic name given the women. Historians say tens of thousands of women from around Asia, many of them Korean, were sent to frontline military brothels to provide sex to Japanese soldiers. It wasn't immediately clear if Abe would be issued a separate written statement or if it would be delivered to the 46 surviving former Korean sex slaves now in their 80s and 90s. The language mirrored past expressions of remorse by other prime ministers, although it was seen by some in Seoul as an improvement over previous comments by Abe's hawkish government, which has been accused of whitewashing wartime atrocities. Another deciding factor was that 1 billion yen, Another deciding factor was that 1 billion yen, $8.3 million, was to create a foundation to help provide support for the victims, came from the government, not private sources, something Tokyo has resisted in the past. South Korean Foreign Minister Yun Bing-si said Seoul considered the agreement final and irreversible as long as Japan faithfully follows with its promises. Last Monday, Abe called South Korean President Park Geun-hye and reiterated his apology. He said Tokyo would implement the deal and call the issue settled irreversibly. Park said she hoped the two countries would build mutual trust and open a new era in ties based on the agreement. After phoning Park, Abe told reporters that the agreement was based on its commitment to stop future generations from having to repeatedly apologize. Japan and South Korea are now entering a new era, Abe said. He should not drag this problem into the next generation. Park issued a separate statement saying that the deal was the result of government's best efforts to resolve the sex slave issue given its urgency. Most of the victims are at an advanced age, and 9 died this year alone, she said. I hope the mental pains of the elderly comfort women will be eased, Park said. The initial reaction of former sex slaves was mixed. One woman said she would follow the government's lead, while another vowed to ignore the accord because Tokyo didn't consider the money to be formal compensation. Isn't it natural to make legal compensation if they commit a crime, said Lee Sung, 88, according to South Korea's Yonhap News Agency. Sum and Seoul saw the deal, while not perfect, as an important step forward. If we brushed aside this deal, the comfort women issue would remain unresolved forever, said Lee Won Dong, director of Institute of Japanese Studies at Seoul's Kumin University. Elderly women would die one by one. South Korea and Japan would engage in history wars and find it harder to improve ties. Many South Koreans continue to feel bitterness over Japan's brutal colonial occupation of the Korean Peninsula from 1910 to 1945. But South Korean officials have also faced calls to improve ties with Japan, the world's number 3 economy and a regional powerhouse, not least from U.S. officials eager for a strong united front against a rising China and North Korea's pursuit of nuclear-armed missiles that could target the American mainland. The U.S. welcomed the announcement, with Secretary of State John Kerry applauding the two leaders' courage and vision. We believe this agreement will promote healing and help improve relations between two of the United States' most important allies, Kerry said in a statement. The spokesman for the UN Secretary General said Ban Ki-moon welcomed the agreement and appreciated the leadership and vision of Park and Abe. Japan appeared emboldened to make the overture to Seoul after the first former leaders' meeting between the neighbors in 3.5 years. In November, and after South Korea courts recently acquitted a Japanese reporter charged with defaming Park and refused to review a complaint by a South Korean seeking individual compensation for Japan's forceful mobilization of workers during colonial days. Seoul, meanwhile, said it will refrain from criticizing Japan over the issue and will talk with relevant organizations, a reference to civic groups representing the former sex slaves, to try to resolve Japan's grievance over a statue of a girl representing victims of Japanese sexual slavery that sits in front of the Japanese embassy in downtown Seoul. Yoon said, South Korea recognizes Japan's worries about security over the statue, where anti-Tokyo protests take place weekly. Farmers wait for soggy fields to clear. Decatur. Corey Ritter didn't feel as if there was much he could do Monday as rain continued to flood his farm fields near Blue Mound. Ritter was seeing more water in fields than he could remember in a long time. It's just a lot of water, Ritter said. Part of what it's winter and the water is not flowing as well. Water is everywhere. The heavy rain is not detrimental this time of year like when could be when crops are in the ground, Ritter said. It can help replenish the soil, said Doug Upoff, who farms in Shelby County. It was dry, Upoff said. We've taken care of the drought conditions. We take the weather as it comes. Upoff said still more rain has fallen in the past week than is needed. He said about 10 inches of rain has fallen in the area since Wednesday. Upoff is glad he used nitrogen stabilizer in the fall to keep fertilizer from washing off. He said it instead is able to stick with the soil. Ritter doesn't apply all the nitrogen to his fields in the fall and instead waits to finish the work in the spring because of what can happen during the winter. We have a little flexibility, Ritter said. It is a long time before the corn needs the nitrogen. Ritter plans to run more soil testing in the spring to get a better idea of the condition it is in for growing crops. Ritter is hoping for a freeze that is typical by this point in the year. That can help loosen the ground more than any tillage work can, he said. As for the rain, the farmers are ready for it to stop for now. Ritter still has more work than he wants to get done, like hauling stored grain if trucks can get through. With mud and flooded roadways, he knows that it could be a challenge and is prepared to wait as necessary. Macon County Engineer Bruce Bird said part of the job this week for crews will be to clean up what washes off from farm fields. Bird said corn stubble left over from harvest can be washed onto roads due to large amounts of rain that can fall. We'll take whatever comes our way, Bird said. The cleanup is easier. Bird said cleaning up after the rain is less work than from snow. Simple challenges reap impressive dividends for the needy, Decatur. As Jesse Van Volkenberg was leaving the Good Samaritan Inn after enjoying a hot lunch, he was surprised to see two long tables stacked full of gloves, hats, and scarves. Some were soft, some were thick, and few were handmade. "I'm looking for something to keep my hands warm," he said. "My fingers are what gets cold." Van Volkenberg and other clients at the Good Samaritan Inn were treated to the winter accessories in December after they had finished lunch. Each client was allowed to select a scarf or a hat and a pair of gloves. Though a simple challenge by Carla Bohm's Sunday school teacher at New Beginnings Church of God, she was able to collect more than 250 items for the distribution. "Every week, we should make a difference in somebody's life," Bohm said of the challenge given by her teacher. "It'd be a little different. It could be a little thing or a big thing, but every week," she asks. For her first project, she wanted to hand out Halloween treat bags to the children visiting the Good Samaritan. She posted a message on Facebook and mentioned her idea to the Sunday school classmates. Bohm was able to assemble 80 bags, with 53 being distributed to the children under 12 years old. The remaining bags were given to Catholic charities. After the Halloween distribution, Bohm decided to tackle a similar project after sitting in her car during one of the first cold days. "I bet some of the people up there could use some gloves," she said, "so I put it on Facebook again." Bohm contacted the Good Samaritan Inn for a number of clients. She was told between 250 and 300 visit each day. "My first thought was that I've bitten off more than I can chew," she said. "Then I thought, we can do this, and we have." With the help of her husband, daughter, and granddaughter, Bohm distributed more than half of the items during the Saturday lunch hour and promised to come back the next week. Milton Barbie, head gardener for Good Samaritan, encourages others to help out their clients. "She's the only person who came to help like this," he said. "The Good Samaritan Inn provides free meals to those in need. Through the help of volunteers and donations, they are able to continue the program. We have homeless people and they don't really have much at all," Barbie said. "They need as much of this stuff as they can." Bohm claims the challenge she was given for her Sunday school teacher isn't difficult to accomplish. She gives credit for the distributions process to the class. "For the distribution success to the class. If it hadn't been for my church, I wouldn't have done this," she said. "But it takes one person at a time." This has been Mary Mortland reading the Decatur Herald for part one for Tuesday, December 29th, 2015. Please join us for part two, beginning with the obituaries.